Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go. We are, in fact, off and running live. Of course it's live. It's the 16th day of March 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live, and someday we'll be back to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com as quick as we get the whole hacking and phishing thing sorted out. Sorry about that. It's a pain in the rear end, but, you know, we didn't do it. It just got done, so... I have talked to John Fox. John is trying to get it all sorted out and make some sense out of it. So cross your fingers it'll happen soon. On the other hand, everything you need to participate in the program is available over at HeadOn.live as well. We've got a PayPal button. Boy, is that important. We also have access to the chat room. Just jump on in, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and wander on into the merry, wacky, zany, multimedia, real-time screwball extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, all capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has chosen to stay out of the rain, apparently, and remain Sparky instead of Man Cave. Okay, so you'll also be greeted by the likes of Anatole and VT Blom and Squeaky and more to come as this Friday on the Front Porch unfolds on what was a beautiful, I have to tell you, a beautiful Appalachian day. Meanwhile, Clarity says, fire one up, Bob. If I had one, by Jove, I might. It's just been so doggone pretty today. And here in the fabulous Kincaid Mansion Horn Studios, it's a nice 69.4 degrees. That's downright tropical for somebody like me. Nothing but, you know, just no naked radio. It's not warm enough for naked radio yet. That's a mite brisk. Just no. Don't even think about it. But seriously, we wander into the last program of the week with a $400 deficit, and to finish the month, $1,400. So if we could take down 400 of it, that'd be awesome. If we took down more of it, well, for every day that we, that means that's that many more days of fundraising free radio, okay? So here we are. It is, like I said, the 16th of the month. We are at the midway period of the month. We're $400 down, and like I said, 14 to finish the month. If you want to help out via PayPal, we love our subscribers. We have subscribers to thank this evening. Thanks very kindly to our buddy Glenn in New York, and to Tim in Arizona. Thank you both, Glenn and Tim, and thanks to our buddy Reinhard over on the Virginia coast. Thank you, all of you, for being subscribers and being part of the group that helps take down about a quarter of the fundraising needs of this little effort in any given month. Thank you very, very kindly. If you'd like to sign up, well, honest to God, Brother Deacon Asa, I don't know, is the little checkbox there on the PayPal interface for HeadOn.live? I don't know, but barring that, you know, if you'd like to be a subscriber, we'd love to have you. We don't quite have enough subscribers to knock down an entire evening's funding over at patreon.com, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. A couple more $10 a month subscribers, and we'll have an entire program's worth of subscriptions on the Patreon campaign. By the way, Clarity also points out, hello to all the security apparats and Sputnik spawn, trolls be a-trolling. Well, true on both fronts. And thanks, Laurel. Laurel says, I'm pulling hard for your Mountaineers right now. My ESPN bracket is in the top 0.5% worldwide. Texas in my bracket is winning, too, by the way. I saw that. And I freely confess, I have been watching the Mountaineers this afternoon. They are at present about 10:20 to go in the second half, up over Murray State 61-47. But it's, you know, I'm a Mountaineer fan, so I know all kinds of things can go wrong in a very short period of time. And well, I'd be tempted to watch this with a blanket over my head and peering through the little cracks between the fingers that I had over my eyes. But the weird part of it all is that, bless their hearts, WVU's baby sister, little Marshall down in Huntington, actually managed. And I said it would be wild if it happened when the brackets were announced. Little Marshall actually managed to knock off Wichita State, which was a shock to the Shockers. I can assure you of that. Wichita State goes home, and if the Mountaineers win this game, it will be an in-state battle. For the in the field of 32 between Marshall and WVU, which would be kind of cool. That's never happened before, I don't think. And there will be some hooting and hollering going on this weekend if that does in fact if the Mountaineers finish out and that does in fact transpire. So that's what that, you know, March Madness. It should probably be in. At least the first two brackets of March Madness should probably be a national holiday, because this, if you like college basketball, this is just an absolute smorgasbord of, generally speaking, really good hoops. Of course, a lot of people got their brackets blown up when Buffalo decided to go in and not play like the low seed that they were, and or high seed. Well, it depends on how you look at it. Anyway, the distinct underdog that they were, and instead knocked off Arizona. That was surprising. But a four seed like Wichita State getting shockered, I'm sorry, that's just too good not to. Yeah, by Marshall was pretty cool, too. Mountaineers are still up by 11 with 9:20 to go. Yes, I'm watching it. But it's Friday on the front porch, and we'll be doing other things, too. I'm just sort of monitoring out of the corner of my eye. We need to raise $400 tonight. One at 400, two at 200, four at 100, eight at 50, 16 at 25, 32 at 12 and a half, 64 at 6 1/4, 128 at $3.13, and we'll round up that last half penny from 3.125. Round up that last half penny to 13 cents, and we'll put it in the spring cleaning fund for the mansion here, okay? But we do. I'm not kidding. I've got, like I said, a big bill to pay, and we didn't finish that, and I'm still waiting to pay that big bill, and it makes me just feel nervous as a wax cat at the gates of hell. Now, Laurel says my team was South Dakota State. They gave the Buckeyes a pretty good run for a while, but alas, hey, the Jackrabbit women are an 8 seed in the women's tournament, which is cool. That opens the women's tournament opens today, does it not? So, anyway, if you want to help out with the program, yes, Brother Deacon Asa tells me there is a Become a Subscriber checkbox over at the interface at headon.live. Just www.headon.live get you the stream, access to the chat room, and, yes, the PayPal button. You just have to scroll down a ways to get to it. It's right there and waiting for you, and it would be really nice not to have a great big whopping. Yeah, you get the idea. And big thanks to big thanks to Billable Rick for getting us started. Thank you, Rick. Rick says, "Go Mountaineers!" And just tossed a grant into the kitty. I just put in $50 to reduce the deficit. The 40 I pledged last Friday, plus a late fee of $10. Look forward to sitting on the porch and watching the. It's not the nears, damn it, Rick. It's the ears, E-E-R-S. That nears thing is a nasty little slur that got started last. I've heard, you know, I battled with Guy James over that for years. It's not the nears, you freaking Buckeye. The Shockers, Rick says, the Shockers got trumped by Marshall from the Trumpiest state in the nation. So there we are. We went from $400 down to $390. And that's a great start, and hopefully by the end of the program we'll be at zero. I sure do hope so. Now, in terms of stuff, this is one of those odds and ends kind of Fridays, bits and pieces, things that need to be caught up on, and there's quite a cacophony out there today over something ProPublica reported. And to the extent that I made mention of it, it deserves to be reported here, too. Because based upon ProPublica's reporting about Gina Haspel, the nominee to be the head of the CIA, the first woman to ever head the CIA, well, ProPublica was wrong, and they got it wrong, and they admitted they got it wrong when they reported that she oversaw the CIA so-called black site in Thailand at the time that it was torturing Abu Zubaydah by waterboarding him, that's right, count them, 83 times. It turns out that while Abu Zubaydah was in fact waterboarded 83 times, Gina Haspel hadn't gotten there yet. So that didn't happen on Gina Haspel's watch. ProPublica got it wrong. ProPublica admitted it. And now, apparently, that has somehow made Gina Haspel provided her some sort of expiation or something. But not really. Not really. Because, like I said, the fact remains Abu Zubaydah was waterboarded 83 times, and Gina Haspel was somebody who approved of torture. She never threatened to quit her job. She never quit her job. She never put her hand up in the air and said, "Excuse me, we're violating every last shred of agreed upon rules of civilization among civilized nations. We're torturing people. This is unbearable." No, she never said that. She winked at torture. And by the way, she did eventually take over the CIA black site. And, by the way, she also destroyed evidence. Now, granted, she said she destroyed evidence because she was only following orders. Let's go back in time a little bit and see how that only following orders thing worked out to a gang of very nattily dressed Nazis and Japanese imperialists a few generations back. I was only following orders. Well, the Justice Department said it was okay. Well, my boss said it was okay. George Bush said it was okay. It was okay, right? Okay? No, it wasn't okay. It was still torture. And it remains torture to this day. And her name should be mud. And frankly, she shouldn't have a job. She should probably be wearing something bright orange and looking through bars, because that's what we've done to other countries that engaged in torture. So there's that much of a correction to be made. And that's the thing, as Marty points out, did she or did she not have the video evidence of torture destroyed on her orders? Yes, she absolutely did. And just because the W. Bush Justice Department chose not to prosecute it does not mean that it was not criminal in nature. It never got ruled on by a court. She was never held to account. She never stood or sat in the dock. A jury never considered the rightness or wrongness of her actions. And by the way, I don't think there's a statute of limitations on felony torture. Is there a statute of limitations on war crimes? Is there a statute of limitations on torture? Especially on a global basis? Because I'm pretty sure there aren't, isn't. Either one. Pick. But that's one thing. Meanwhile, the other story we had last night, and it was part of the Heimbach headlock and the trumpet in the trailer. Remember the story about how the Tennessee legislature couldn't be bothered to even second a motion for a House resolution in that state condemning, you know, Nazis, white supremacy, alt-right, white nationalists, whatever, fascists, racist fascists. Yeah, you might recall the guy who introduced the resolution couldn't even get a second in the committee. Not one. Another one of those Diogenes moments we've been talking about. Well, courtesy of the folks over at TPM, in this case, Allegra Kirkland in particular, the Tennessee Republicans have now offered an explanation for why they didn't get around to condemning Nazis. I will add before we go into this that it has long been a tenet of mine and by extension of this program and then presumably for those who wish to adopt it for their own of this community that one should always be careful to observe the first law of wholes. When you are in one, stop digging. The first law of holes says when you're in a hole, stop digging. The first law of holes is apparently an alien concept to the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Republican Christians of the Tennessee House of Representatives. Because in attempting to explain why it was that they, gosh, we're so sorry. I mean, Nazis are terrible and awful, but we couldn't second that motion because it was going to be so much trouble. No, really. Writing to TPM, representing Bob Ramsey, who is one of the three good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans, on that particular state government subcommittee in the Tennessee House of Representatives. He said the reason that they couldn't sign on to the resolution condemning Nazis was because part of the resolution, and I read it here in its entirety, part of the resolution called on the Tennessee House of Representatives to ask law enforcement to consider outfits like Identity Evropa, who had a flash mob in Nashville just last week, and the Traditionalist Worker Party, which has a little criminal problem on its hands right now via its leadership, you know, Mother Parrot and Father Parrot and Matthew Heimbach and the Heimbach headlock and the trumpet in the trailer that we talked about last night. The Republicans just got a little bit gushy and queasy and icky feeling by their own admission at the idea of referring to Nazis as domestic terrorists. Yes, it's all so easy to comprehend now. It's all so much simpler. if only that language hadn't been in the resolution that referred to Nazis as domestic terrorists. Well, gosh, the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian Republicans would have jumped right up on it and said, second. And then it would have gone to the House and they could have voted on it. And as long as none of the Nazis were getting called domestic terrorists, it would have been hunky-dory. Like I said, first rule of holes. When you're done, when you're in one, stop digging. But instead, the Republican Party in Tennessee, via people like Bob Ramsey, decided to sink the shovel into that soft earth and scoop up a little bit more and see if they could drop themselves any further below ground level than they already are. In explaining to TPM the thinking of said Republicans, Ramsey said, "These subjects seem simple, but have initiated some of the most bitter decisiveness," it was apparently a written statement, he meant divisiveness, "and debates I have ever witnessed." Really? Wonder what that debate's like. All the Democrats saying, "Ha, Nazis are bad." And far too many of the Republicans saying, "You know, we just ain't so sure about that. We got a president right up there in Washington who done told us that they is good Nazis. He said it plain and clear. Some of them is good people. And you know what? We agree with them. We don't want to be running around calling good people domestic terrorists just because they choose to be Nazis. Listen, America, you can be a Nazi. And some Nazis is good people." Mm-hmm. Ramsey did, and representing Bill Sanderson did, and representing Bud Hulsey did. They wanted representing Clemens to change the language of the bill so that it wouldn't call perfectly good law-abiding Nazis domestic terrorists, because somebody's got to speak up for the good Nazis. Oh, really? This is not a joke. That's their explanation. If only representing Clemens hadn't considered Nazis to be domestic terrorists and asked the Popo to consider them as such, well then, golly, they probably could have condemned some Nazis, as long as everybody understood that they was some good ones. Jesus, God, they didn't use a shovel to dig that hole deeper. They brought in a freaking backhoe. By the way, courtesy of TPM, on the hate map for 2017, as provided by the Southern Poverty Law Center, there are 37 hate groups in the great state of Tennessee. This would include the Ku Klux Klan, the Neo-Confederate League of the South, the Neo-Nazi Aryan Nations, and then the folks who just come to visit. You know, go and see Dollywood and Pigeon Forge, and then go and goose step through a minority neighborhood or two, you know, so they can write it off on their taxes. Groups like Identity Evropa, because the U is apparently broken on far too many Nazi keyboards. Again, just last weekend, Identity Evropa, because they can't spell, they had themselves a flash mob demonstration in a park here in Nash, Vegas. Then they all went out, and then they all went out for some. Some real good barbecue, because remember, they's good Nazis, according to the Republican Party of Tennessee. Phew! These are people who want to carve up the United States and create some nice whites-only states. Now, Andrew Jackson was a vicious slave-owning monstrosity and a genocidal maniac, but there is this much to say for him. Back when some other Merkins started talking about carving up the United States, Andrew Jackson said, I will get me a rope, and I will get on me a horse, and I will ride that horse down to South Carolina, and I will hang the first secessionist I meet, and I'll keep hanging them as high as Haman until such time as they decide they don't want to be secessionists no more. So there's that. But no, have they got a leg to stand on? Is the leg got a jackboot at the end? Does the leg they're standing on goose step from time to time? Is there something wrong with identifying organizations that kill and beat and torment and torture and threaten people? Is there something wrong with referring to them as domestic terrorists? Because after all, Representative Ramsey, as quoted in the TPM story, said that there's some most bitter divisiveness and debates he's ever witnessed over whether or not Nazis are domestic terrorists. Wouldn't you love to see the transcript of said debate? Master Speaker, I rise in opposition to referring to Nazis and Klansmen as domestic terrorists. I ain't never yet heard of a single Nazi or Klansman named Abdul. Never once have I heard any Nazi holler Aloha snack bar before a bombing or a shooting of anybody. I ain't never met no brown-skinned Nazis nor Klansmen to this here day. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to know right now, in the name of the great people of the state of Tennessee, how in the world can you call a Nazi or a Klansman who ain't brown and ain't Muslim a terrorist? Now, we all understand, especially ever since September the 11th of 2001, that you terrorists is all brown-skinned and is Muslims. And we put up for 8 long years with having a brown-skinned Kenyan Muslim you slurper in our White House. And look at the terrorism he done to us, a trying to take away of everybody's guns. He just weren't very good at it. But Mr. Speaker, it is an affront to the proud heritage of the state of Tennessee to think that any good, white, upstanding Christian human being like a Klansman or a Nazi could ever be a domestic terrorist. And over on the Republican side of the House, which is most of the Tennessee legislature, they're all going, huzzah, harumph! Yeah, I'll go ahead and say it again. We have a Nazi problem in the United States. And I will go so far as to say that it appears that there are no less than 3 Nazi sympathizers in the Government Affairs Subcommittee of the Tennessee House of Representatives, based upon what Brother Ramsey there said, a whole shit ton of Nazi sympathizers in the Tennessee legislature, generally speaking. What were they afraid of? I mean, really, let's work through this real quick. That they were going to get sued by Nazis for referring to them as domestic terrorists? Well, friends and neighbors, I'm here to tell you that a member of the legislature acting and speaking in his or her capacity as a member thereof has absolute, well, yeah, pretty sure, if not absolute, near absolute immunity for anything they say or do. Okay? There can be some rules of decorum. For instance, if one of the few lonely Democrats in the Tennessee House of Representatives stood up and said, I'm deeply disturbed that Representative Thumbbutt from Bucksnort, Tennessee over there, I am deeply offended that he is a Nazi sympathizer. That person could be called down by the Speaker of the House for not behaving in a collegial and civil fashion and engaging in name-calling by calling him a Nazi sympathizer. That there would be against the rules, and you could do something to that little old pathetic little old Democrat over there. You certainly could. But there ain't a Nazi on earth that could sue the Tennessee legislature for referring to them as domestic terrorists. I don't mean sue and win. I mean sue at all. They're freaking immune. So if they're immune, what are they afraid of? Well, seems pretty obvious to me what they're afraid of. Those bitter and divisive arguments, debates that the Representative Ramsey was a-talking about. That means that there's a lot of people in Tennessee who don't think Nazis and Klansmen are domestic terrorists. You want to guess which way they vote? I'll give you three guesses, and two don't count. Nobody knows better than a Republican how thorough and how deep runs the fascist strain in the base of the Republican Party. And if Republicans start acknowledging that their constituents are, you know, Nazis, well, the Nazis who keep them in office might not cotton to that, might not take kindly to it at all. And the next thing you know, they might stay home. I mean, the Nazis are not going to run out and start voting for Democrats, but they might stay home. Or they might wait to vote for a Republican who came out as a Nazi just like them, which would make the Republican Party even more Nazi than it already is. Ah, oh, bless your heart, Silent R. Lamar. Sorry for the all caps. Keep talking hillbilly. You keep preaching in your hillbilly tongue. Isn't, aren't, who cares if it's hillbilly truth? Lamar goes on to ask, I wonder if the Nazi Party were to say they're better Americans than George Washington, what would they say? Well, they wouldn't say that he's better than George Washington. They'd say that George Washington was a man just like them. That they were the true heirs of George Washington. Because George Washington was president of a white country where only white men could ever participate in the government. Not even the white women's. See how it works? Meanwhile, whisperings in the wind down Mozuppi way. You might recall, if you are a regular listener to this program, and most of the folks who listen are regular listeners, once you start, it's hard to stop. It's like radio potato chips. just not like peanut M&Ms. Don't ask. On the evening that Thad Cochran announced he was no longer going to be able to be a Senate in and for the people of the great state of Mississippi, and that he was going to bow out come April next month, I wondered on air, right into this here microphone, I wondered if maybe that might get a few people feeling a mite queasy in the Republican Party in Mississippi, Stan. And along the way, I pointed out a particular individual by the name of Chris McDaniel. I call him Pappy, just because, well, granted, Pappy McDaniel was the sort of good guy in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, but still, it's just too convenient. Chris McDaniel had been planning to primary the other senator, who is also up for election this year, in re-election, there's an election this year. But because of what Thad Cochran did, instead of there being one senatorial election in Mississippi, Stan, there's going to be two. And now, Chris McDaniel, to the chagrin of the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-to-ventilist, homosexual, Christian, Republican Party in Mississippi, has decided he is going to forego primarying the incumbent Roger Wicker in Mississippi. He's going to try to go for the unexpired term of Thad Cochran. In other words, he's going to run in an open field of Mississippi Republicans. This, meanwhile, has, like I said, seriously perturbed the Republicans in that state. Among other things, Republican Governor Phil Bryant, he said of McDaniel's decision, "This opportunistic behavior is a sad commentary for a young man who once had great potential." Let me see if I can translate that for you from the original cracker. "We was once upon a time willing to consider letting that little pissant have some sort of a position, but not no more. He has done shit in his nest." All better now? How bad's Chris McDaniel? Well, he's a real Lulu. Oh yeah. Among other things, it was only 4 years or so ago that Chris McDaniel, who, by the way, does a Christian conservative radio program, or did one, he said that the rising gun violence problem we have is a direct result of the hippity-hoppity culture, because that hippity-hoppity culture values the rap music and destruction of community values more than it does poetry. You see, just because something rhymes don't necessarily means it's poetry. And just because something don't rhyme don't mean it ain't. No, really. I wish to goodness I was kidding. Yeah, he said that. Mm-hmm. Not a joke. Let me see if I can dredge up the audio, because it's really too good to pass up. Stupid like this. Just a second here. Why, yes, there it is. And by the way, my beloved Mountaineers have escaped the round of 64 and will, in fact, play in-state rival Marshall on Sunday. I think we all know what I'm going to be doing on Sunday. Right? Yeah. Okay, so here's the real live, honest-to-goodness, no-kidding clip of Chris McDaniel blaming the hippity-hoppity music for gun violence.
Welcome to the Right Side Radio Show. Conservative talk hosted by a conservative lawyer.
That's what I'm talking about!
Chris McDaniel.
Let's be very outspoken about what we're talking about here. The reason Canada is breaking out with brand new gun violence has nothing to do with United States and guns.
Wait a minute, just so we're all clear. I am not responsible for the shitty audio on this. You guys send me emails. Oh, Bob, you clipped. You're clipping. Oh, Bob. Dear me, it's unlistenable. You hear this? This guy doesn't understand anything. Doesn't understand any audio. That's below the high mid range. It sounds like his radio show is produced in a 1972 Ford Pinto with the speakers there. Yeah.
It has everything to do with a culture that is morally bankrupt. What kind of culture is that? That's right. It's called hip-hop.
You're listening to Right Side Radio.
Name a redeeming quality of hip-hop.
Feels like my eyes have been blown wide open.
With Chris McDaniel.
I don't know anything about hip-hop that's been good for this country, and it's not before you get carried away. This has nothing to do with race. Because there are just...
Because it never has nothing to do with race. But no, that's real. And like I said, it's 4 years old. And this is the guy who now has the Republicans there in Mississippi, Stan, in a state of dismay. They're already comparing him to, wait for it, Roy Tola Moore. And ideologically, philosophically speaking, there's just not a hell of a lot of room between him and Roy Moore. He is, in fact, quite possibly toxic to some of those Republicans in Mississippi who like to pretend that they're not full-on Klansmen. And so if, according to the Weekly Standard, if Democrats manage to take advantage of the highly Democratic national environment, get a strong candidate into the runoff, capitalize on McDaniel's weaknesses, grab some Republican votes, and maintain a turnout advantage, they could take the seat. Well, that wouldn't be any fun, because we don't like Doug Jones anymore either, do we? Man, is he lacking in ideological purity, even though he would contribute to the Senate of the United States having a Democratic majority if lightning were to strike and miracles were to take place and pigs were to take wing and, you know, we were to win in November of this year. Mm-hmm. But remember, Chris McDaniel's objections to hippity-hoppity music has nothing to do with race, because he told you so. I mean, he wouldn't lie to you. Nothing on that about race, because there has never been not one white kid listen to any of that there race music, if and you can call it music in the first place. Not one. Nope. No white boys, no white girls. I mean, because, see, what it is all the sales of all of that hip-hop music, that's being done by wealthy black children who go out and just buy it all. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not about race, because only black, right. Mm-hmm. Well, you can. So maybe that would be interesting. I don't know what the stat. I don't know what the status of the elections are in Mississippi. I don't even know if there are. Again, it's that Diogenes thing. I don't know if there are two honest human beings who could run as Democrats in that benighted place. But it's still. Well, it's interesting to ponder, and it's nice to see the Republicans getting a little water-boweled. I hope it doesn't hurt too little. Yeah, what else? Well, we had the story of the teacher in California who accidentally discharged... Well, the gun just went off. Isn't that how the script reads? He sure taught that ceiling something. That was probably a terrorist Al-Qaeda ISIS ceiling anyway. That happened. Well, from that incident in California, let's run over to Utah, which I was reminded is actually becoming rather of a nice place. The Mormons are even getting outnumbered now in places like Salt Lake City. But it's similar to the case in West Virginia, even though the people are changing, the power structure is not. And so consequently, you get these booger eaters who can't think of anything better to do with places like Grand Staircase, Escalante, and Bear's Ears than to blow the living hell out of it and poison a bunch of people downwind. And so it was at Westbrook Elementary School in Taylorsville, Utah. Teacher Michelle Ferguson Montgomery needed a restroom break. Now, there were no children present in the school. It was before the school opened. No staff was there. But Michelle Ferguson Montgomery went to the ladies' room, and the gun just went off. Mm-hmm. She shot herself in the leg. Now the school district and the school itself went to pains to explain to teachers, their parents, that Ms. Ferguson Montgomery was legally possessing her freedom protector on school property. It's legal in Utah for people to have a concealed weapons permit and carry firearms onto school property after they've completed a safety training course. Maybe the Utah firearm safety training course is lacking in a little bit of specificity and doesn't include a statement about not shooting yourself in the leg when you go to the ladies' room. It was probably drafted by a bunch of men who never thought about anything like that. Principal Karen Chatterton wrote in her letter to the parents, "Neither the district nor school can restrict access to our campuses for concealed weapons permit holders. While this can be a highly emotional issue, we encourage you to have a civil dialogue with our elected officials." That's a way of saying, I really don't want to be fired for saying this, but gosh, I hope you'll tell the people that earn their salaries by getting voted for that you won't vote for them unless they do something that let us keep the goddamn guns out of our fucking schools. Yeah.
You know, the only thing that'll stop a bad woman with a gun in the potty is a good woman with a gun in the potty. That was the statement released by Wayne the Peter over at the National Rifle Association, America's wealthiest, most powerful domestic terror organization. You know, I've noticed that a few groups, have begun referring to the National Rifle Association as a domestic terror organization. And if nothing else, can I just say, I'd like to have credit for that. I mean, not that they're saying it, but just, you know, well, it's like Carl the assistant greenskeeper and what he got from the Dalai Lama. You know, there will be no money for you today, but on your deathbed you will retain perfect consciousness. So I've got that going for me, which is good. You know, because I said, hey, Lama, what about a little something for the effort? Well, that's kind of where I am with referring to the NRA as a domestic terror organization. I think I've been doing it longer than most people, because I think I recognized it sooner than most people. So, you know, how about a little something for the effort? Perfect consciousness would be cool. But if you happen to be out on the Twitters or the Facebook, and you see somebody saying, well, by Jove, the National Rifle Association is a domestic terror organization, do me a little favor, please. I never ask you guys to do anything. But if you see something like that, say, oh, by the way, my buddy Bob Kincaid, who's been doing progressive radio for almost the entirety of this century, has been saying that for a long time. Glad you caught on. Glad you caught up. Welcome to the party. I know, that's pitiful, isn't it? That's just pathetic. That's a pathetic cry for attention. It's a pathetic plea for acknowledgement of it. Well, whatever. By the way, Silent R. Lamar said, and may I say, and then it's back to work and listening to the show, Columbo moment, just one more thing. So back in the day of Washington, only white men did the thinking. I wonder how long would that thinking last today with white women? Well, that's called social change. It's called progress. But, you know, we do still have a term out there called mansplaining. Right. Billable Rick celebrating with me. Nears win 85-68. We're going to have words about that Nears business. Meanwhile, Bill in Allentown says, hey, Bob, subject line McDaniel, if his father or grandfather was doing a radio show 50 years ago, he'd probably be railing against rock and roll. Well, yeah, no, more like 60. I'm 55, so that's 1963. Yeah, 60 years ago or so. No, they wouldn't be calling it. They'd be calling it that rice music. That rice music. Because that's what they called it. We don't want our precious little white daughters in their eyelet and their crinolines and their damasks and silks out there gyrating around like they're some kind of heathens to that their race music, which of course made the precious darlings want to gyrate and carry on. Just all the much more. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, and this is a trenchant observation courtesy of Clarence, I hope Mr. Thad Cochran gives thanks to the black Democrats. I really doubt it'll happen. Black Democrats helped Cochran beat McDaniel in a primary runoff in 2014. McDaniel has a hill to climb. Democrats are somewhat meaningful if they use their leverage. Wouldn't it be lovely if they used their leverage to actually get a Democrat into office? I know.
Well, isn't that interesting? Lee in New York City helping out. From electoralvote.com, Mississippi has a nonpartisan jungle primary with the top two finishers meeting in a runoff in December. So that means there would have to be some serious strategy going on. McDaniels is trying to get into that top two, quite clearly. But what the Mississippi Republicans are worrying about, and it's the opposite of a worry that some Democrats in California have right now, is that you'll have so damn many Republicans voting that are running for the office that all the votes will be diluted, and a Democrat might actually sneak into that last two. I know. Quel horreur. And finally, as we come to the end of the filibobster, yeah, Marty was right there. Man, there's not a lot of internet latency between you and me, Marty. How very California of Mississippi to have a jungle primary. I don't know who came up with it first. But no, as we wrap up the filibobster here, a last one, and this is not a this is sad. It's just sad. No babies got shot in Mobile tonight. I'm not going to do that twice. I don't know if you caught it or not, but we have lost a champion. One of the great women of the Democratic Party. One of the great women of the House of Representatives. Personal friend of mine. And a dear, dear friend to Appalachia. I had the pleasure of speaking briefly with her this March 3, just 5 months ago. Louise Slaughter of New York has passed away. Representative Slaughter, who always said, "No, call me Louise." It was a Kentucky girl born, and later on moved to New York. She disproved the theory of that somewhat famous song. She fell last week. And having fallen, she was in hospital at George Washington University, and she passed away today. Among other things, I'm proud to have known her because when we came up with, well, when we got tired of sitting around and waiting for all the smart people to come up with a solution to mountaintop removal, and we decided to take it into our own hands and go to D.C. and get the ball rolling, and came up with the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act. It's H.R. 786 in the current Congress and bears her signature. After convincing Dennis Kucinich to sponsor it, it was no time at all before Louise Slaughter jumped in and said, "Oh, I want in on this. I want to get behind this." She was the senior member of the New York Congressional Delegation. Glenn, a longstanding friend of this program, sent a note saying, "My Congresswoman, I'm very sad." She was in the midst of serving her 16th term in the Congress, and the 16 terms that she spent in that Congress, 32 years, not quite, are one of the best examples you could ever find of the idiocy of the idea of term limits. Why in heaven's name should people with a really, really good member of Congress have that person taken away from them by some arbitrary determination that people should only be allowed to serve the people for so long? Now, on the Republican side, maybe it makes sense. Maybe it's only fair that you have to step out, pull your little trotters out of the trough, and let somebody else stand up there and try to get their front and their back and their snout and get sideways in the trough, because that's how Republicans are. But Representative Louise Slaughter was and remained first and foremost a servant not only of her constituents in New York, but of Americans all over this country. One of the things that she accomplished that she was proudest of was the fact that she identified and did something about defective body armor for the men and women in our armed forces. When nobody else was doing it. It was always such a delight to talk to her, and it must have been a little bit discordant up in New York, because Louise never lost her Kentucky accent. She sounded like she was just stepped right out of the holler, even when she was standing hip deep in snow up in the frozen wastes of New York State. I use that term lovingly, frozen wastes. And she brought something really, really special to the struggle for human dignity and human health in Appalachia, because before she ever went to Congress, let's do the ciphering real quick. She went to Congress when she was already 56 years old. Before that, she was a microbiologist. She understood sciencey things like epidemiology, and she didn't have a problem processing information like the fact that the dust that arises from the massive amounts of blasting that attend mountaintop removal have horrible long-term health consequences for the people who have no choice but to breathe it, so that some coal executive a gajillion miles away can put down money on a new lake house or a new house down in the island somewhere, or maybe a new Maybach or a new Porsche. She didn't have any problem understanding that whatsoever. And by God, when the Trump administration and Representative Shrinky Zinke, when they put the kibosh on the review of the health research into mountaintop removals, toxic effects, when they put the kibosh on that review, I mean to tell you, Louise Slaughter, oh, she was hopping mad. She was, as we would say down this way, madder than an old wet hen. And she's dead. But she died fighting. She lived what Mother Jones said. Pray for the dead, but fight like hell for the living. Oh God, I'm gonna miss her. Anytime we start to see, now you just come on by the office any old time you want to. I'd love to sit down and talk a little bit. You just tell them who you are, and they'll put you right through. Because we're friends. And that wasn't any smoke and that wasn't any shine. She was as real as one human being can get inside that legislative body. Paul Ryan. Yeah, that Paul Ryan. Even ordered the flag over the United States House of Representatives to be flown at half-mast for her passing. Liam Fitzsimmons was her chief of staff. He released the following statement. To have met Louise Slaughter is to have known a force of nature. She was a relentless advocate for Western New York, whose visionary leadership brought infrastructure upgrades, technology and research investments, and two federal manufacturing institutes to Rochester that will transform the local economy for generations to come. As the first chairwoman of the House Rules Committee, Louise blazed a path that many women continue to follow. It is difficult to find a segment of society that Louise didn't help shape over the course of more than 30 years in Congress, from health care to genetic non-discrimination to historic ethics reforms. So thanks, Louise Slaughter, for a life well lived. And thank you for what you did for Appalachia. Thank you for the fact that you left Appalachia, but never forgot Appalachia. Yeah, Glenn, she was a great lady. And like you say, she really cared. We are diminished by her passing. Thank you very much indeed, Louise Slaughter. And my condolences to all those who loved her, and to her friends and her family, and my eternal thanks to her constituents for having the good common sense to send that magnificent hillbilly, that wonderful hillbilly woman, to represent them in the House of Representatives. So it's Friday on the front porch. It's time to fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. You know the drill. If you're already friends with Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, on Skype, then it'll show you the breadcrumb trail. If you've never been a part of the Friday on the Front Porch conversation group, the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, well, send a contact request on Skype, not to me, but to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C. He moderates this and has for years on end, and he'll get you into the program, okay? And I have an update to give before we go to the break. Thank you very kindly to Stephen. Stephen, in one fell swoop, took us down to $195 to go, or $190 to go. Thank you so much, Stephen. And then Angel jumped in and took it down to $165. This is important. This is big. Thank you very, very kindly. So we got 165 to go in an hour and 51 minutes or so. Maybe we can do it. I sure hope we can. And a long-distance dedication, that song about Harlan County, for Louise Slaughter, from us here at the Horn. We'll be back. She proved him wrong.
In the deep dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I traced my bloodline. And it's took a pretty girl to Won't you walk with me out of the mouth of this holler? Or we'll never leave Harlan alive. Where the sun comes up about 10 in the morning, and the sun goes down about 3 in the day, and you feel your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life just thinking of how to get away. No one ever knew there was coal in the mountains till a man from the northeast arrived, waving $100 bills, said, "I'll pay you for your minerals." But he never left Harlan alive. Grandma sold out cheap, and they moved out west of Conway to a farm where Baby Richard and River wine. And I bet they danced them a jig, and they laughed and sang a new song. Who said we never leave Harlan alive? Times they got hard, and tobacco wasn't selling, and old granddad knew what he'd do to survive. He went and dug for Harlan coal and sent the money back to grandma, but he never left Harlan alive. Where the sun comes up about 10 in the morning, and the sun goes down about 3 in the day, and you fill your cup with whatever bitter brew you're drinking, and you spend your life digging coal from the bottom of your grave.
That's about as haunting a tune, not just the tune, but the lyric itself, as any I know. Yeah, that, never mind all that business about the Hotel California where you can check out but you can never leave. You'll never leave Harlan alive. And in many, and it's not just Harlan County, Kentucky. Harlan is a stand-in for the sacrifice zone that is the coal extraction region of Appalachia generally. But let's try to move to the upbeat. Yeah, that's a good point. Albert from Rhode Island writes and says, Bob, evangelists have helped the sale of race music for decades. American teenagers have bought that music because they knew it would antagonize their parents if they listened to it. That's absolutely true. It didn't hurt that it had a great beat and you could dance to it either. Yeah. Jesus, race music. This country. So anyway, it's Friday on the front porch, and it's 16 minutes past the hour. Let's run over and check in with Sparky, in charge of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, and see what's going on. Hey, Sparky.
Hello.
Another rainy day in Northern California, is it?
No, I'm waiting patiently for it to open up again so it'll give us another show like last night.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, we had jumping hail on the back lawn, and we were under a tornado watch for a while.
Okay, so that's a little bit weird, right?
Well, we don't have too many tornado watches, but which was weird was when I went onto the TV, the guy was showing the picture about two blocks away from my house with the winds were shearing just a little ways from there, and that's what they figured would start a twister. You know, where they go in opposite directions.
Yeah, because I know we don't have a tomato watch out there till 4th of July, right?
No, I haven't even planted tomatoes yet. I was waiting for it to quit raining so much.
Yeah, you got to have let the soil dry out a little bit so the roots can spread around. And
well, I haven't even tilled yet.
And you got to, and the soil temperature's really got to be above 72 degrees or nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Well, I'm glad there wasn't a tornado. It'd be nice if there wasn't climate change, too, but unfortunately that's real.
It didn't happen, but the hail was kind of neat to watch.
Well, as long as your car's in the garage and your windshield isn't getting busted out.
Well, it's not that big. I mean, it was just a little bit smaller than a marble. Big enough so it'd be jumping up and down on the lawn. About the size of a bean.
Yeah, okay, just that, yeah, popcorn hail. Not like the hail that David Letterman got fired as a weatherman for back in his Indianapolis days. They canned him one evening because he went on and said, "Ladies and gentlemen, there was hail the size of canned hams." And that was the end of his weather forecasting career.
Well, he's moved on to Netflix now.
Yeah, I caught the first one with Obama. I didn't see that.
He's got Obama interested in doing a Netflix show.
I know. Was that his doing?
Well, I think he was the first guest on Dave's show.
Yeah.
But, so I think he might have put a bug in his ear.
Well, I guess that's a possibility, yeah.
And then he's gone through a couple other guests on there, but
well, I saw one. What's the name of the young woman? The young Afghan woman. Apparently, she's been on there, and
yeah, and then what's his name? Clooney, George Clooney.
George Clooney, right? Yeah.
They sat outside the LAX airport and ate In-N-Out burgers, watching airplanes.
Well, I tell you, I get a big kick out of comedians in cars getting coffee. That's fun, too. Seinfeld?
Yeah. It's supposed to be a new one out?
I think, what, are they into season 3, season 4?
Something like that. The one he did with the Kevin Hart was a blast because of the car they drove. It was the old Porsche race car.
Well, yeah, he has a taste for Porsches. And I saw the one just the other day that he did He had a Dutch Porsche police car from like 1966. It was a Porsche 356. Made no sense whatsoever.
I don't think I saw that one.
Can't remember the guy's name, but it's enjoyable. Well, it looks like we've got a good little group starting out this evening. Proud to say. Haven't seen Haley in a long time. Hey, Haley, how are you? Unmuting, I presume.
Oh, okay. Am I unmuted now?
You are unmuted.
Okay. I'm doing well. I was at work today and missed most of the not good news out of the NCAA tournament as far as the our state's SEC team. It was not a good day for the Piglets.
They're no longer Razorbacks in your mind?
Well, they're Razorbacks, but they kind of laid an egg like Oklahoma did yesterday.
Easily barbecued this year. Yeah, Oklahoma did lay an egg, but the biggest stunner has to have been Arizona falling on its face to Buffalo. Sheesh.
Yeah, I heard about that one. I also heard the news about Coke U losing.
Oh, Wichita, yeah.
Yeah. They left the Missouri Valley for greener pastures, but it just didn't seem to help them much.
Well, it's the fact that they got taken down by poor little Marshall is what makes it really interesting, because the selection committee must have sensed something in the wind, because they set it up so that Marshall and WVU would play. If they both won their first round games, they'd play in the second round. And so now this state is going to vibrate like a struck tuning fork until Sunday.
Oh yeah, it's kind of an Alabama type feel.
It's an in-state rivalry.
Except it's an in-state rivalry that seldom ever happens. There's a school up in Northeast Arkansas, Arkansas State, and they've been clamoring to play the Razorbacks for years, and the Razorbacks will not schedule them. And they've only played once in my lifetime as for men's basketball, and that was an NIT game years ago. But that's not why I call tonight. There was during the national school walkout, there was been reports of some schools being supportive, some co-opting it. And then there is schools like Greenbrier, Arkansas, which punished three students for walking out during the school walkout. And they were given a choice between a two-day suspension or paddling.
What? They had a choice of being suspended or being beaten?
Yes. They took the beating.
And this is not front page news all across the country? Why haven't I heard about this? I mean, I'm glad you're telling me now, but
I've posted about it on my Twitter timeline, but it didn't come out that it was actually the location of it until.
Yeah, that needs to be boosted. Arkansas students choose beating, or elect to be beaten instead of remaining silent in the face of gun violence.
Well, and you know, the news broke from one of the parents. Their mother tweeted what happened. And then one of the local TV stations reported on it. And then Newsweek has taken up the story. So, and then there was another incident at a little suburb of Pine Bluff called Whitehall. And there were 13 students that were given 5-day suspensions. Not a day suspension. 5-day suspensions.
Wow.
I mean, let me check, make sure that was a check my Twitter, make sure that it's let me see the news story here. I want to make sure there was suspension and not a and just detention. Let me see. It was given a 5-day detention.
Well, I just found the beating story, and I'm gonna send that out right now.
Well, it's not something that this state is should be proud of. It's another black eye, another embarrassment. But it is what it is. And closer to home, my local school district here did allow the students to go out and have a faculty led basically a school assembly outside. And it was basically co-opted. But that didn't stop some of the more paranoid parents from chiming in. And I read some of the comments, and one of the parents that chimed in was, this was a political event. Their Facebook wall was open. And of course, you could read all the MAGA-ish comments. So... that's the world I live in.
And I had that story last night, Haley, out of South Carolina, about how the South Carolina stand governor down there, this here is a political rally, and they ought not be out there protesting. Instead, they should be a prayer.
Oh, hey. Wow. Hey, Bob, have you seen the... I just came across this. Did you see the new cover of the New Yorker magazine?
No, I haven't.
Oh, my God. Just Google it. The New Yorker, their cover for March 26th, Trump exposed. You got to see it.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, we're just talking about a visual goodness. On the radio, so, yeah.
I'll leave it to you.
I understand. Well, go find it. Again, the cover of the New Yorker?
Yep, the New Yorker.
I had no idea that Trump was doing naked radio like you, Bob.
Oh, stop it. That's disgusting.
Do you all remember those statues that went up spontaneously across the country after his election, the naked Trump statues? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. What a freak show that his whole administration is, you know?
Oh, without
just
a doubt.
Just unbelievable.
Sorry, I'm just putting this tweet together, and I want to, because I don't want to run the risk of forgetting about it. This is too this is too huge.
Hey, Bob, I wanted to mention, I saw you in your Maybach earlier this week in near my office building.
Shh. Ixnay on the Abok May.
I didn't realize that was a Mercedes-Benz, like a 660, right?
Yeah, it's a tricked out Mercedes.
Yeah, yeah.
Texas Betsy's in Hollywood today.
Oh yeah.
Oh really? What's she doing?
Sightseeing.
Oh, well, good for her.
With her son.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Okay, tweet is away. Very good.
All the high schools around here walked out. My old high school, I mean, they had to have their go to the gym because it was raining.
Well, it's a different story in places like, well, in the Stan states, and maybe people don't understand that. A statement like that making a statement like that is a personally dangerous statement to a kid in Mississippi or in Arkansas or Alabama or Georgia or et cetera. It kind of goes back to what I've said in the past. If you're progressive, if you're liberal, and you are progressive and liberal behind the cornpone curtain, chances are you're tough as nails.
But don't forget, Bob, this is double X country, state of Jefferson.
Well, I know. Yeah, I was about to offer a caveat. Yeah.
And yeah, Bob, I'm not exactly in a blue part of Minnesota either. Okay. I mean, I'm just 9 miles from Steve King's district. Don't forget that.
True enough. Yeah. Let's see. With a little bit of incredulity, Robert in Australia writes, schools are still allowed to assault students in the United States? I was sent to Catholic school back in the 60s and 70s. Beating students with a cane or a strap and later just getting punched by teachers was common. That all stopped years ago. It was banned by the federal government. But in the USA, schools are still allowed to assault students? Is that MAGA? You're damn right that's MAGA, Robert. And see, we don't want no central federal big government telling us how to run our schools down here, because we know better what our young scholars need, and what our young scholars need down here when they step out of line is a thorough thrashing, a good beating, because sometimes you know how it is with these youngins listening to their hippity-hoppity music and everything. They can only hear through their buttocks, and that's why we keep the paddle handy. We refer to it as administering the board of edumacation.
Oh, and Bob, about this conservatives' new walk up, not out motion, like all of a sudden we're supposed to walk up to the kids who have been bullied, as if these conservatives weren't the same people who, like, 60 times a week are telling the kids who were bullied to suck it up, snowflake, bullying is just what normally happens in schools.
Yeah,
now
right.
All of a sudden they're worried about bullying. Really?
Yeah, anything to protect their precious guns.
I've been called fatso my entire life. I haven't spent one thin day on this planet, okay? I mean, trust me, I've been bullied from here. I was bullied in high school from grade school, high school, from here to kingdom come. Part of the reason why I left high school 2 years early to go to college was because of the bullying. It's like, really? You think bullying? You think this is going to be like an equalizer for kids being shot?
No,
schools?
No. Your point,
really?
your point is very well taken, Laurel. The very same people who have been squealing, "Suck it up, Buttercup," and you know, bunch of snowflakes, and going back as far as 2000, "Get over it, libtards." Yeah, these are the ones who are all of a sudden worried about bullying. Yeah, anything to deflect, anything to avoid having to talk about what the actual real honest-to-God problem is. I got an example here of something. I mean, this is just people are losing their tiny little freaking minds. The maggots are. So up in New York, in Rocky Point, out on Long Island, Newsday has the story. They had a parent, teacher, student meeting about guns in school, and about whether or not teachers needed to have guns, or whether you needed to have cops wandering the cops wandering the hallways with pistols, or you know, maybe, who knows, bazookas. So all of a sudden, in the middle of a statement being made by a 17-year-old senior, a young woman by the name of Jade Pinkenberg, she stood up to say that teachers ought not be carrying guns, and of course, a back reference to the middle school teacher who shot herself in the leg in the potty in Utah, and the California teacher who slaughtered the ceiling a few days ago. Well, up steps Well, a gundamentalist. An ammosexual. And he wants to prove a point. And what's interesting is we don't know what his name was, but he was hauled away. Here's what happened. Go on. Damn it. Well, since when does this not... All right, I'll have it here in a second. Only takes a minute. And Firefox is funny this way. I don't fully understand exactly what's going on, but, you know, whatever. He wanted to make this argument, and so many of them do, that somehow or another, guns are the only solution to any problem. And he did it. He tried to prove his point with a knife.
I'm considerably larger than you, okay? If something happened, if I decided to attack you, it would take the cops 3 to 5 minutes to come here. Probably 10 if the traffic's bad. What are you going to do now? What are you going to do now?
Stop it!
Yeah. Stop.
He drew a knife. I'm bigger than you, and I got a knife. And the cops are 10 miles away in traffic, 10 minutes away in traffic. What are you going to do, huh?
5 minutes to come here. Probably 10 if the traffic's bad. What are you going to do now? What are you going to do?
I'd kill you if that was one of my children.
Yeah. Stop.
Yeah. This is inappropriate, please.
No, it's
not
inappropriate.
That's illegal.
Unfortunately, it's reality, though.
You need to pull a switchblade out of my kid in a school. That's insane.
What do you think, a guy with a gun?
No, that's completely illegal.
This is why we need security.
This is why we need armed guards.
No,
this is why we
need...
What are you going to do? I just walked into the building with this. It's not a gun, but I can do a lot of damage with it. This, what are you going to do? I have two girls in this school.
Sir?
What are you going to do? I want to know.
Would you first please...
What are you going to do? Tell me. What are you going to do?
He's still waving around his knife, in case you're wondering. What are you going to do? What are you going to do about it, huh? Now, this is a guy, I mean, I'm not trying to make any judgments based on what anybody says. But this is a guy in, like, a black leather jacket and jeans, hair halfway down to his ass, wrapped up back in a bandana, and he pulls a knife. Does he really want people if there was a room full of armed teachers there, do you realize what a bloodletting would have taken place when he did that? He would have had holes that had holes in him, but the problem is, with all the teachers shooting, there'd be other people down. Good God!
There are a lot of unstable teachers in this country, Bob. Oh my God, there are.
Oh no, Isaac sent around a video on Twitter the other day. Showed a teacher losing her shit in the classroom and smacking a student. You know, this is middle school when kids are hard to deal with, but smacking the shit out of a kid in the head and screaming. You know, we just got done with a teacher's strike here in West Virginia, and there may be one brewing out in Oklahoma. And I am sympathetic to the plight of teachers. Because they are underpaid, underappreciated, under-resourced, and generally overworked. But at the same time that I'm sympathetic, this does not mean that every teacher is an angel. People lead lives, and they have breaking points, and they fall apart. And it can happen at any minute, and we want them to have guns? You know, no amount of psychological profiling even is going to predict when somebody's going to snap. We know that because we psychologically profile the cops, and we still have a cop shooting people problem and beating people
Let me tell you, Bob, I saw a teacher reach a breaking point back in when I was like in fifth grade. I remember back in like fifth grade, I was doing detention. I was serving detention for being a butthead back then. And the teacher who was serving detention was also our boys basketball coach in high school. So we served detention in the stands in the high school, watching the boys basketball practice. And the coach is trying to run the boys basketball practice. And one of the kids in detention is kind of being mouthy, and he's off to the side right on the edge of the bleachers. And out of nowhere, the coach, the teacher that's monitoring this detention, walks up to the kid. And the kid is sitting like up in the fifth or sixth row of the bleachers. Guy reaches up to the kid in the sixth row of the bleachers, grabs him by the shirt, pulls him right down to the gym floor, and starts yelling at him. Oh, my God. He wiped the floor with this kid. Seriously. You want people, teachers, with guns when they can break down like that?
No.
Oh, my God.
No, not me. Not I. Not no. No, I'll take a pass on that. Thanks.
I mean, that's burned in my memory 40 years on. Jeepers criminy. And this is a public school. What do you think Catholic schools are like?
Well, I mean, witness what Robert wrote from Australia a few minutes ago. On the other hand... I mean, okay, just from my own experience, I had a seventh grade math teacher whose first name was whose last name had the word crazy appended to it. It was alliterative, but she, you know, she was roundly considered by all her students. You got warned about her as crazy. And yes, I went to school at a time, this is the late 70s, when in Alabama children were beaten. And when she decided to administer a beating, she took great pleasure in showing everybody her paddle that had holes drilled in it. You know, so she could work up better speed and it would, you know, land with more impact. And she would take a student out into the hallway and have them put their hands up on the block wall and spread their legs apart. And she would go to the other side of the hallway and get a running start. Okay? If anybody who's ever seen Happy Gilmore, the way he runs at the tee to tee off, that. And everybody who got it said it hurt like holy hell. Until one young heathen, and he was a coach's son. She hauled him out to administer some rough justice. And he timed it. He watched her coming at him. He watched the backswing. He watched her come into the foreswing, and then he took a step to the side and let her swing that paddle into that block wall. And it jarred her all the way up her arm and into her spine. And there weren't nearly so many paddlings after that. Because, well, the strategy worked. I've mentioned before on this program, my grandmother was a teacher. And she was said to have been liberal with the use of the paddle. I don't approve of it. I don't think it teaches anything. And I don't say, and you can always find some maggot out there who will say, well,
You know, my daddy beat the living shit out of me when I was a kid. And you know what? I turned out all right.
Well, it does teach the value of violence to those who value violence. You know?
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, I have to know, Billable Rick is with us. You there, Rick?
Yes. Hey.
What's with your what was with the late appearance on Randy?
Apparently, one of the what the hell is the guy's name? Felix Sater was making the rounds. I guess this morning on the morning interview shows, the morning news programs. And, you know, he was talking about, you know, his involvement, his assistance to the FBI, the CIA, the DIA, and so forth, over the last 20 years, and how he was actually, in a arrangement with Trump to try and build, Trump Tower, Moscow, and so forth. And, you know, the sense that I'm getting is that based on some of the statements that he made, I think what Mueller is trying to do, he issued a subpoena to the Trump Organization, as most listeners probably know. There is no Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination as to business records of a corporation, certainly, as long as it's more than just, you know, if it's a solo corporation, then it might you might have a privilege. But by and large, the a corporation doesn't have a Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. So therefore you got to produce documents in response to subpoena. So my suspicion was that this guy's like, you know, been involved with Trump. There were emails that he exchanged in which, we can make this boy, you know, president or whatever, you know, we can, with Vlad's help, we can get him elected and so forth and so on. And so I think he's playing like both sides of the aisle, so to speak. And, I think he was trying to, my suspicion is he might be like an unindicted co-conspirator along with Trump and who knows who else.
Might have one of those target letters we've talked about. But then again, he's already a felon, right?
Yeah, he's a felon from, I think, from doing some kind of fraud back like 20 years back. But I suspect that what Mueller wants is Mueller's probably already gotten the records that he has with regard to his dealings with the Trump Organization. And he's probably seen what the Trump Organization is willing to cough up. And if they don't cough it all up, then he has, stuff from Sater to say, hey, you guys aren't complying. What's the deal here? Assuming that the Trump Organization even complies. I mean, that has a motion to compel written all over it, you know?
Well, it kind of does, yeah.
Yeah, so that was kind of my take on Sater's role in this whole thing. Plus, he was involved in, selling units in the Trump Soho development, a lot of Russians.
Yeah.
So he has a lot of information on the money laundering angle, I suspect.
Yeah, I asked about that building while I was up there, and I was told, oh, there's no such thing anymore. And in fact, had I had the time, I wanted to wander over and see where it was, you know, going to, or what it was, because that whole thing went to pieces. And it was only because of some pretty sketchy behavior on the part of the Manhattan district attorney that we're not finding out now whether or not bright orange is a good color for Ivanka.
Right. Right.
Hey, Bob and Rick, what's your take on Don Jr.'s wife hiring a criminal lawyer in a divorce case?
Oh, really? That's strange.
Yeah, I saw that earlier today. I don't. It's probably not a bad move.
Yeah.
Because
what kind of message is that, Sam?
Well, I guess it sends a message that it's a crime family, so you better lawyer up.
Lawyer up.
Well, it sends the message that she thinks she may at least have, if not more than tangential criminal exposure that might be brought out during the divorce proceedings.
That could be. Yeah.
Rick, You had a theory about a knock agent that caught my attention. I didn't quite
about
wrap my head around what you were saying about
a knock agent.
Yeah, you thought somebody might be a double agent.
Oh yeah. I'm talking about Felix Sater, because he, for these guys. I mean, I include Felix among them. You know, Trump, Felix. I mean, the Trump family. It's all about money and how much money can you make from a deal, and so he figured, okay, he expected a payoff from the from Trump after he helped him get elected. Okay, I mean, he's claiming he doesn't have anything to do with that Russia's assistance in getting Trump elected, even though he's the one who has all these Russian contacts. He has contacts with these oligarchs, and he's got contacts all over the world with these unsavory characters. So, he figures, okay, well, okay, I'm not getting my payoff from Trump. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and switch to the other side now. Because the guy has worked as an informant for like the last 20 years, that's how he avoided going to prison in the late 90s for his, I guess it was a stock fraud scheme or something like that. So I just think he's going to play both sides of the street and see, which has a better payoff for him.
But he's also up to his eyeballs in Russian oligarchs.
Yeah, he is.
Sater is.
Well, I would, if I were him, I would be very careful not to wander around in parks where, guys with trench coats happen to be, with like, let's just say aerosol cans or something like that,
Can we all just chip in to give like Mueller a giant suit that protects him from polonium or something?
There you go. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think he probably figures, he was about to be, I guess his involvement in this whole thing was about to be exposed by the media. So I think this was sort of a preemptive.
Well, about Rick, about to be, I mean, as Scott and Punky point out, Episode 6 of Dirty Money on Netflix is Felix Sater.
Oh, is it?
Okay. He's in Get Me Roger Stone, and I'm pretty sure he also features in what's the Dutch documentary? The
Dirty Unsavory Friends of Trump.
The Unsavory Friends of Donald Trump. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It could be. Yeah. I mean, I don't know for sure. But I mean, I think his involvement was going to become more pronounced, at least to the American media hasn't really talked that much about him. So I think that was probably what was, that was probably what was about to happen. So I think he went out there just because he wanted to tell his story with, to set the narrative instead of having the narrative be set by others. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, the other big thing that came out today was, I was indulging in my dirty little habit in the morning.
Your dirty habit. I was waiting on this.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I can tell when I'm watching some shameless promotion, and there was a lot of that was, but
absolutely.
Stormy Daniels' lawyer showed up on the Morning Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Where he claimed that she is prepared to say that she was threatened with physical violence.
Mm-hmm.
If she should choose not to be silent. And having said that, he said everything else that came after that was, well, I'm not going to answer that at this time. I'm not. You'll have to watch the 60 Minutes. So he was, trying to drum up PR for the 60 Minutes interview.
Sure, pimping for Les Moonves. Absolutely.
No, he was pimping for himself.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the more people he can get watching that, the better it is for his business. And he's already a very, very wealthy man, just based on the medical fraud case that he won in California last year. That was the largest jury verdict of that the state had last year.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, this is great free advertising. That does not mean that I'm casting doubt on whether she was threatened, because frankly, if you dig back into Michael Cohen's history, you'll find that he has a history of issuing threats.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a thug. I mean, it's basically a thuggish organization. We basically have a crime boss leading this country, at least in name anyway, you know?
We have a gangster nation, gangster economy, gangster defense, gangster infrastructure, gangster you name it. Welcome to collapse.
Yeah, right.
Well, he claims he's got six other women ready to come forward, too, saying that,
no,
that they
were
threatened.
No, he just says he has them. He didn't say they're ready to come forward, did he?
Well, I guess it's all how you read the fine print.
And he says he's trying to vet their stories first, I think, is what he's saying.
You heard the story about the people who installed that bridge at Florida International that collapsed after 5 days?
No, tell me. I haven't heard it. Laurel,
you've heard of that overhead walking bridge that collapsed down in South Florida?
Like six people died. Yeah.
Right. Get to the point.
Same company, the exact same company that put that installation in, installed the 35W bridge in Minneapolis after the collapse.
Oh, geez.
After the collapse, so that's same company that put in this bridge, put in the 35W bridge after the collapse.
So that's got to inspire a lot of confidence there among you Minnesotans, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Jeez. What could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? You know, what they're probably using too much Chinese concrete and steel is my guess. You know, it's probably like totally porous and, you know, weak and what have you, and just, you know, can't handle the weight.
They installed this walk over bridge without even bothering to close traffic to that highway as they were doing it. Can you imagine trying to tighten the cables on that and trying to get all the fittings tightened with full traffic going on?
No. That's insane.
Well, there was a case in Arkansas a few years ago where the contractor was building a new bridge and it put the brackets backwards on the bridge and they had to tear everything out.
Oh, geez. Wow. Wow. Man. Well, I know that the Bay Bridge up in San Francisco, the Bay Area, actually it's Oakland, from Oakland to San Francisco, I guess, that was supposedly going to be made with Chinese steel that the state of California is going to purchase. And I think they couldn't, I think they purchased it and realized that the stuff was junk. So they had to source it, you know, domestically after all. At least that was my understanding. So the stuff just wasn't...
Well, Trump's buildings are made with Chinese steel. We know that.
Yeah.
And there's a... if you go looking around on Coal River Mountain Watch's page, you'll find a photograph that an activist by the name of T. Page Del Porto, he's been on this show, and he plays a mean guitar, and he's played at rallies and stuff. Some people have probably heard him. He took of this vast staging yard for steel pipe for the Mountain Valley Pipeline. I mean, it's huge. And is that American steel? Guessing not. I'd almost wager money that it's not. Now, is it Brazilian or Chinese or I don't know. Maybe it's Canadian. If you see the photo, you'll see that, and I've mentioned this in the past, you'll see that the steel is all coated green. Well, that's an anti-corrosion coating for once it's buried in the ground. But I was asking around about it, and I'm trying to remember who it was, and it doesn't come immediately to mind, but it was someone who knew the business, and he said, you know what that green coating is, right? I said, no, tell me. He said, that's an anti-corrosion coating for once it's in the ground. I said, well, I guess that's it. He said, problem is, when you leave it laying out in the sun, it stops being effective when you bury it. Well, this stuff's been sitting out in the sun, and the rain, and the wind, and the snow, and the sun, and the heat, for well over a year. And there are other staging areas along the highway with similar amounts. So I think it's probably a safe guess that they'll no sooner get this in the ground and it'll blow to the moon. And it's going to run across my county and every adjoining county.
This is a pipeline, Bob?
Yeah, this is called the Mountain View or Mountain Valley Pipeline. This is huge pipe.
Wow.
And it's going to carry ungodly amounts of pressurized gas. Pressurized when it fails, and it's not if it fails, it's when it fails. It's going to be one hell of a big explosion. They're going and not too terribly far from me at all. They're going to build themselves a compressor station, and that'll make a real big fireball when it goes.
Oh, jeez. Well, even though he was crazier than a loon, Ted Kaczynski was right about the industrialized society, I must say,
In what sense?
In terms of how it threatens, the existence of humans. It makes it difficult for, in other words, we're sowing the seeds of our own destruction by basically fouling our own nest and so forth,
Yeah.
He can't possibly be mailing bombs to black people down in Texas from behind bars, is he?
No, I don't think so.
Compared to that story, right?
Last time I checked, people who were in federal supermaxes aren't really allowed to do too much.
Well, somebody who's been mailing bombs to black people down in Texas that aren't thinking too kindly of them, so.
I know. In the Austin area, I'm surprised that they didn't cancel the South by Southwest festival that was going on.
Well, they made a determination that it had nothing to do with South by Southwest.
Yeah. Yeah,
it just has to do with people of color being murdered, systematically and deliberately, and with bombs. Yeah.
Well, my guess is that there's very few people of color who go to the South by Southwest festival. It's probably mostly for white folks' music, is my guess. I don't know. Sort of like that country music event in Las Vegas where that guy, shot up people from the MGM Grand or whatever the hell it was. I think I have the wrong hotel. I always get them confused, but whatever the hotel was, those attendees were not people of color. They were, good God fearing, Bible believing, evangelicals for the most part,
Yeah, but that was a fake. It's been proven a fake. There's crisis actors everywhere on that footage.
Yeah, exactly. And even the guy who committed suicide was a crisis actor. That was his final acting job, unfortunately. No longer around to crisis act anymore,
Yeah, there's one crisis actor out there, and her name's Dana Lush.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really. Oh.
But speaking of which, you want to talk about an expert little piece of trolling? Check this out. Young David Hogg from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School.
Mm-hmm.
He's put out a video, a promo for the March for Our Lives. And he deliberately did it in the style of Dana Lush. Black background, all grim and spooky and creepy looking and shit. And it's a dandy.
I'll give him props for that.
Oh, this is seriously good. And maybe it'll run here in a minute. Working. There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Here we go. Yes. All right. It's called What If. Come on. Really? Oh, this is annoying.
I'm having a hell of a time just trying to keep the South Dakota State girls game up online here.
Women's, sorry.
Jackrabbit. How is Jackrabbits not masculine?
Okay, here we go.
Let's start from there. But they're not faring too well against Illinois.
What if our politicians weren't the bitch of the NRA?
It doesn't make sense that I have to wait till I'm 21 to get a handgun, but I can get this weapon at 18. I don't know.
We didn't address it, Mr. President.
Well, I think
why? Because you're afraid of the NRA, right?
What if we all voted and said this is not Okay.
It was an incredibly exciting election night in a district there never should have been a question that the Republicans should have won. They're sending a Democrat from the heart of Trump country.
Voters are sending a message. And if the president isn't hearing it, a whole lot of other people are.
What if we stood up as Americans and fought for our freedom and our children's lives?
Everybody is saying politicians who are corrupt, politicians who are accepting money from these organizations, you can't run from us. We are the people who voted you in, and we are the people who will vote you out.
My name is David Hogg, and I stand with the Never Again movement. Join us on March 24th as we march for our lives and the future of America.
Introducing the hashtag, what if, and of course, March for Our Lives.
That's true. You got a future.
Yeah. Well, you know, if some fundamental, well, God forbid, but you know what I'm, yeah.
Yeah, but you can see him going to a real good school and just becoming somebody.
Oh, yeah, one of the, I'm sure the Ivies are already clamoring after him. And look, let's remember, is there an age requirement to serve in the House of Representatives?
All right, this is totally off, but I looked it up. What is a female jackrabbit called? Black-tailed jackrabbits are not actually rabbits, but are hares. Hares are born with fur and are larger than rabbits. They usually have taller hind legs and longer ears. Jackrabbits produce a lot of young called leverets or bunnies. Females give birth to several litters a year, each with 1 to 6 young. I'm even more confused now. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Jane rabbits? Why do we have to gender the rabbits?
I've heard doe.
Yeah, doe. Oh, it's Clarity.
Buck and doe, yeah.
Hey, Clarity.
Hi.
Did you sneak in while I wasn't looking?
Oh, well, I'm not dressed up, so you probably didn't want to look, you know.
No.
I'm hard on the eyes today.
Are you a dark beauty today? It's dark and you're a beauty?
That's right, yeah. I was all excited about the sunrise, and the sun never got a chance. Anyway, wait a minute.
There, all better now.
Yeah, listen to the Majority Report with Ben Dixon this morning, and Sam was on the top of his form, but he said, you know, what if Trump just decides that all these professional people are just not cooperative enough and just replace all of his staff with yes men and people he likes on Fox Network.
Thank you, Mark Twain.
Yeah, it's just bizarre. But
okay,
you know,
here we go. Jackrabbit online.
Wait, hold up, Laurel. Clarity was in the middle of something.
Bad. Oh, my bad.
You know, just having his pick of the people he likes to listen to every morning that have the perfect news for him. And, he, you know, his staff meetings won't be so hard to digest because everything will be just the way he wants them to be. And then after that, they talked about, well, what if he does that? And then he muddies up the water enough because everybody has kind of accepted the new standards of shit that the president could get away with without, you know, causing any type of major reaction. I mean, he's just nullified all of our sensation about what is proper for the office. And he said that, you know, if the Democrats can't put up a decent candidate, we're not going to be able to run on Trump misbehaving because people just are so used to it now that it's like they can't even see it in the room. And that if we don't run a good candidate, he can just move a little bit, you know, towards the center and take all those people in the middle of the road that he needs. He only needs 21% because he's got his 30% of his diehards to go. So the Democrats got to get 51%. He's got to get 21%. So that was Sam's scenario he spun up today. And you said, you know, if we don't do something 2020, he's going to be reelected.
Yeah. No, I mean, I desperately want to be proven wrong.
Oh, but me too, Bob. I'm tired of you wearing that Cassandra robe.
Yeah, and I do not have the legs for it, I got to tell you. It's a long robe. The tattered purple robe with the frayed appliqué moons and stars on it, and "Will thee kiss me in the dark, baby?" written in glow in the dark paint across the front. Yeah, absolutely. But I want this blue wave to be real, but again, because it's my job to be a little ray of fucking sunshine, can I point out? And this is an excellent lesson. This is a really good lesson, and nobody has to feel bad, okay? All those people who said, "I had to vote my conscience." Well, see, I'm doing it again. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it, Bob. For all those people who got all third party-ish back in November 2016.
Fury Brigade.
There was a third candidate, and he barely merited mention in the Pennsylvania race the other night. He was not a Green. I'm guessing there just aren't any in that district, or if there are, both of them were, you know, busy that day or something.
Libertarian.
It was a libertarian. I don't use that TARD word at all.
Sit
unless it's a quote. But here's the thing. By the time the smoke had cleared, if half the people who voted for him had voted for Rick Saccone, Saccone would have been the winner. Yeah. Now, these libertarians share, if you were to draw a Venn diagram, it's probably 90% overlap with the Republican candidate.
Yep.
But because of that 10%, and I'm just speculating on the percentage, of course, let's make it easier, 80%. But because of that 20% that didn't overlap, they had to go and vote their conscience. So now they're going to get a fucking Democrat in that office when it's the last damn thing they wanted. And you know what? I am all for, I want lots of third party voting over on the right side of our political spectrum.
Well, if we have a progressive platform, it's going to pull Trump to the left, and that will draw the libertarians out of the woodwork, out of his base. If we can pull, you know, the political movement more progressive, you know, single payer and things that people really do believe in when it comes down to it.
But there's a math lesson here. And I'm the guy that has a hard time with all the ciphering, right?
Yeah, you sure do.
It's pretty easy because I can do long division. Saccone lost by less than half of the number of people who voted for the Libertarian. And that seems to me a pretty obvious answer. And we can see it in play again. The write-in votes in Alabama were more than were needed to beat Doug Jones. This is not to any way undercut the heroic efforts that were made by people to get out the vote and to get out and vote under circumstances that were arguably difficult. It was, after all, Talibama. And we're dealing with an era in which we are up to our eyeballs in voter suppression. But again, those people who just couldn't bear to vote for, and good on them for doing it, but they were the difference. And it has been largely overlooked. And so this blue wave we keep talking about seems to be dependent upon disaffected Republicans as much or more as it is dependent upon
turnout,
a high Democratic turnout and highly motivated Democrats. Now, maybe I'm an asshole for saying that, but it certainly is what the data looks like.
Well, it goes back to the enemy of our enemy is our friend kind of thing. It's a dangerous way to play.
Well, I think what it speaks to, Bob, is I think it speaks to how narrowly divided the electorate is in a lot of these races. I mean, the margins are like razor thin, you know, when the amount of a third party vote is actually two times greater than the final margin between the first and second place candidates, you know, and the same thing happened with regard to Jill Stein in Wisconsin and, Pennsylvania and Michigan, or certainly Wisconsin and Michigan. You know, the number of people who voted for her was way more than the margin between Trump and Hillary. So, you know, I think that, you know, the thing that
you can never underestimate the amount of funny stuff that just happens when you put numbers into computers, you know.
Well, I think it was actually, you know, Laurel, I think that was a clean election as far as I can tell.
Oh, Bob, by the way, you're not the only one who is offended apparently by my Jackrabbit Girls comment. ESPN, the website, apparently put the South Dakota State Nova halftime score as a final. So apparently Villanova has won by 11, despite the fact that the game's only in halftime.
What's the score?
The ESPN put Villanova in the brackets as defeating South Dakota State 38-27. That's the final. But that
that's a very low scoring game. Jeez.
But that's the halftime score.
So somebody obviously let the air out of the ball on that one, I think, you know?
Exactly.
You know, the old four corners is back, right?
Exactly.
Oh, those are boring games, weren't they?
It's in the second half. Just to update you, South Dakota State is only down by – the women are only down by 6, okay, right now. trying to keep hope alive here. I'm just trying to keep hope alive here.
Just trying to have something to root for. The Golden Gophers, exactly. the Golden Gophers aren't in the dance, are they?
No.
The women are. And guess who they beat in the first round? Green Bay.
Wisconsin.
We're 3-0 against the Cheeseheads this year. Yay! So yeah, the women are in the second round now. They get to face Oregon, I believe. But Oregon's a 2 seed. I'm not liking their chances too good against them. But
well, they got to get past Nova.
That's South Dakota State. South Dakota State's playing Villanova. Minnesota has to play Oregon.
Yeah. Sorry, yeah.
Laurel, is UConn the team to beat in the women's?
Yes.
NCAA, I figured as much.
Definitely.
They always are.
UConn, they're not as big of a favorite as they were in past years, but yeah, I've got them in about half of my brackets.
Is Stanford a major contender as well this year or not?
Not so much, no.
Not so much. Okay. They're in the tourney, though, right?
Yeah, they are in the tourney. Let me check here. Where is Stanford at? Let me check. I can't even find Stanford.
Maybe they're not in it.
They are in it. Stanford's in it.
Okay.
Stanford's in it. Let me check again. No, Stanford is definitely in it. I just can't find them yet. They're a 4 seed. They're a 4 seed in the Lexington region. They play Gonzaga in the first round tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, as far as like teams from out west, Gonzaga's about the only team left in the men's Final Four.
In the men's tournament, all the Pac-12 teams are gone.
I know, that's amazing. In the first day, on the first
all the Pac-12 teams are gone.
Actually, UCLA and Arizona State didn't even win their play-in game.
Those two didn't even make the play-in game.
The joint job that Arizona did. Well.
Oh, geez. That's horrible.
And that's like taking something away from Buffalo. Buffalo played their eyeballs out.
Yeah.
They did. played a heck of a game.
But when it's Arizona, you got to think that somebody was looking past somebody. Somebody was a little too full of themselves. And look, you can say the same thing about four-seeded Wichita State. Oh, we're going to play Marshall.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing I don't get, Bob. Arizona, if I'm not mistaken, has like two really good seven-footers on their team. And that's how they beat UCLA with their size, their height. And, you know, Buffalo basically had like six guards playing. I mean, obviously only five at a time, but, you know, all the guys were small. And yet they were able to beat a tall team, you know, which tells me they must have just hustled a lot more and gotten to the ball quicker and just tried harder. And, you know, good for them as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I've never been a big Arizona fan, but after both UCLA and Arizona State lost their play-in games, I found myself in the unenviable position of actually rooting for Arizona. And I guess I didn't do a very good job. You know, I guess I hexed them, as you know, I pettyized them or whatever.
Our pile land.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. My favorite painful bracket moment was back in 2007. I had a bracket that was in the top 100 nationwide going into the final. Top 100 nationwide. And I had Memphis defeating Kansas in the final. And Memphis State was up by 6 points with less than a minute to go in the final. Kansas came from behind and won it.
Mm.
Talk about pain.
Yeah, but I tell you what, Purdue took it on the chin today. I mean, they didn't have to sweat their game much or anything, but
they lost their big man.
To lose their big man. I mean, he fell from like 19 miles up and landed directly on his right elbow and just broke the hell out of it.
They tried to put him back in the game, Bob. How long did that last? Not long?
No.
He realized he couldn't grip the ball or something, huh?
It's like, I don't have a right arm. Where'd it go?
Yeah. Oh, geez.
Well, we are at 22 minutes past the hour, and we got out to a flying start thanks to you, Rick, and thanks to Steve, and thanks to Angel, and we just stopped right there. So we got $165 to go. Wait. Yeah, we got $165 to go fundraising for the evening, and we've got 36 minutes and 55 seconds to get there. Because, when it gets to the middle of the month, and by the way, I need to mention something. There are some changes coming to the PayPal fee structure, and I hope it's not going to negatively impact our subscribers. It pisses me off, and I've made my opinion clear to them. They're going to a flat fee structure, so. I'm not entirely sure. I think it has to do with how much we wind up with here versus money tacked on to somebody contributing. But I've seen two or three people bailing out, and I've gotten notes saying, I hate their fee structure. I hate them. Well, I appreciate that. But the fact of the matter is, like I said, our subscribers are about, a quarter of the month's fundraising. And I breaks my heart, to see folks go away and this fee thing doesn't help. But that having been said, we're at $165. And if the number,
I'm still here, Bob,
if the number,
I'm one of your sea monkeys still here, Bob.
I thank you, Laurel. Thank you very kindly. I see you every month and I do appreciate it. And that's why I try to thank all the subscribers, the first thing, every program right off the top. Because I want people to know what it, and I try to thank everybody who contributes to the program. Because it is the only reason it's here. And again, I hate talking about it. But when we get mid-month and things get a little bit, not a whole bunch of subscribers, you know, two or three a night, things like that. People we definitely and desperately appreciate. But that means that when we're not making the evening's goal, making the month's bill paying is, well, not difficult, impossible. And we've got big bills sitting around at the middle of the month that I'm waiting to pay, and I can't if we're not making the fundraising goals. So we're at $165. We got 35 minutes left in the program, and that needs to go from $165 to zero if it's at all humanly possible. And look, I sit around and I try to make it clear what we're talking about here. A $10 subscriber, you really are talking about 16 cents per hour of programming. We're not selling it. We don't charge anybody anything for any, you know. You get complete access, everybody, anybody. And, you know, maybe it's a conversation to have within the community. Should I start charging? Should we start charging for every podcast? Should we hang 99 cents on every podcast? And would it be more valued that way? I mean, I really wanted us to operate on a different model. You know, the non-Gulfstream model.
Or a $4.95 a month fee or something like that for month access, something.
But we've got to we can't raise less than we're raising and stay on the air. I know it sounds absolutely crazy, but there are bills associated with doing this program, and then there are bills associated with keeping a roof over a head.
You got to eat.
And eating something besides the fancy ramen with the flavor boost packet, because that shit ain't good for you. And I'm trying to make things better, but I'm also, like I said, I'm running back and forth. I'm burning more fuel than I like to, but we have medical issues going on with a member of our family, and it has to be dealt with. And there are a lot of things that I don't talk about on the program, and I can promise you none of it has anything to do with payments on a Gulfstream 5. I kind of wish it did. But because if I was making payments on a Gulfstream 5, you can bet your ass I wouldn't be here fundraising to keep the program on the air. Oddly enough, at no point in time has Rush Limbaugh stopped accepting a salary, even though 10, 15, 20 years ago, he stopped ever needing money.
Well, they quit paying Imus, and he quit. And I don't know if you've heard, but Clear Channel was taken over by Bain Capital, and they went belly up today.
Wait, Bain Capital has had Clear Channel for ages.
Right, right. But that's their modus operandi. They, you know, eventually, once they get a hold of you, it's the death knell. They went Chapter 11 today. Yes.
Do you mean iHeart Radio?
Yes, sir. iHeart Radio and wow. Toys R Us.
Jesus, that's been a long time coming because iHeart Radio. Yep. And look, at the same time, look at don't they also own Premier Radio Networks?
I think so.
That's the bunch that's given Limbaugh $55 million a year or more.
Well, maybe that's the only way old Lush is going to get off the air, you know.
Thank you.
Stop paying him if they can.
But I do have to say thank you to Charlene. Thank you, Charlene, so very much. We just took it down to 140 to go. So with 30 minutes or so remaining in the program, maybe there's 14 folks with $10 a piece. Maybe there's one.
I'm still broken up about Toys R Us leaving, and I haven't been a kid in 30 years.
Well,
they've been in business for 90 years.
Okay, that's a good topic. Toys R Us. Because Toys R Us is a stand-in for basically a lot of retail. Now, the Bain Capital effect, which is also known as the Romney effect, where you go in,
exactly.
You suck all the value out of a thing, give yourself a fat whopping payday, and then watch the subject business wither and die. That's part of it. But the other part of it is the so-called death of retail. We've got a running gag in our family back when Margie was just little bitty. And she saw Toys R Us, and we were in a hurry to get somewhere. And she said, "Daddy, I want to go to Toys R Us." And I said, "Ah, they're closed." And being little and innocent, she said, "Oh, bummer." So sweet. Makes me cry now. And she kind of never got her Toys R Us experience. I mean, eventually she got into one or so, but it's one of those things that you kind of torment yourself about as a parent. But, I mean, look, shoes. Now, there are places all over the internet where you can buy a pair of shoes. But they still haven't figured out a way to make it possible for you to lay your hands on those shoes. Or, more particularly, you know, look, if a shirt doesn't fit, a shirt doesn't fit. And nobody gets broken up about it. Shoes are expensive, and if shoes don't fit, they will punish you. Punish yeah. you, get it?
That's a good one, Bob.
Thank you.
You need a cowbell for that.
Okay, let me reach down there. Yeah.
Baby bell.
Just a tiny jingle. Yeah. But you, retail is fun. Shopping. Yeah, is fun. If you've got in mind, I want this, and you go and you get it and you get out, that's usually how I shop. I have a list, I go in, I get it, I get out. Not a lot of impulse purchasing. But when it comes to, like, oh, I don't know. Rick, you're a lawyer, you have to buy suits, right?
Yeah, you reminded me, My suits are getting kind of worn out. I think I've had too many moths in my closet. You know?
Well, do you just wear any old thing, or do you take a few minutes? Hey, I like this pinstripe. No, wait a minute. Oh, look at that window pane plaid. And when you have the tactile sensation of being, you know, where the product is, or God knows if there's actually a store where they still have knowledgeable salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And they can and the salesperson can say, well, you know, I think the 44 the 44 doesn't fit you as well as the 46 does, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Guys sizes and so forth. But beyond that, also the fact that retail is largely dying because nobody wants to pay the people it takes to make a good retail experience.
That's true, and they're
this
not
is in the
to
name
pay
of,
for the...
And this is all in the name of holy productivity.
That's
yeah.
Right.
And there's
and
a lot of
components. And they're also not willing to pay for the brick-and-mortar facility that's
right.
required to house all the goods that are sold in retail.
And, Rick, you have to consider Amazon. You know, that's a component into the downfall. And
oh, huge. Well,
huge.
You know, for so many years, the reason that Amazon did so well, you have the convenience factor. People don't have
right.
to go in and buy something.
2 days.
And then secondly, for a very long time, they weren't charging any sales tax. And so
right.
you automatically got like a discount of like anywhere from what, 7, 8, 9% just by going by,
that's
you know,
right.
shopping online.
And with
you
Prime,
know,
it's free shipping.
Nothing about that.
Yep.
You know, about the fact that, you know, the Amazons and, you know, those sorts of outfits were basically, you know, they had an unfair competitive advantage against the brick and mortar companies.
But
that
I get what Bob is saying. So I'm sorry to interrupt, Rick. I apologize.
Yeah.
I get what Bob was saying, because to me it harkens back to the video days when you could go and pick out your favorite movie at the Blockbuster,
yeah,
wrap
right.
your hands around it, you know, and. It's just an era that's long gone. It's not coming
mm-hmm.
back.
Well,
no.
And tucked away inside all of this is one of the most pernicious terms I think exists in both business and labor, and that is productivity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your Wall Street Harvard MBA, and of course that stands for more bigger assholes, types and oh well, you know, American productivity. We've got to raise productivity.
And the you know, the high-minded pince-nez glasses wearing economists say American productivity is higher than it has ever been. Meanwhile, the people who are actually doing the fucking work know very damn good and well that productivity is a word that the bosses use for getting more work out of you for less goddamn money.
Yeah, right.
And that's what it has been for a very long time. So over at Bloomberg, I ran into an article from a couple of days ago. Well, no, it's from today. No, it's from today. It is by Justin Fox. It's billed as an opinion piece. And okay, I admit I was grabbed by the headline. I'm just pathetic that way, because the headline is, in the future there will be a distillery on every corner. I thought, well, bring on the future. That's a future I can party with. Oh, and thanks very kindly. We're down to 1:30 now, thanks to Kitty in Boston. Thank you, Kitty. Thank you so much. So in the future, there will be a distillery on every corner. The subhead says Americans are finding job fulfillment in the craft booze industry, which continues its upward growth trajectory unabated. All right. Wow, this sounds horribly, horribly nerdy, doesn't it? Except for the fact that there's booze involved. And, you know, I get all wistful about it. But the first paragraph says, one of the fun things I discovered looking through the jobs data released by the Bureau of Labor Statistics last week was that during a generally impressive stretch for manufacturing employment growth, breweries, wineries, and distilleries was among the industries leading the way. And we get a bar graph. Manufacturing industries with the biggest job gains. Change in payroll employment January 2017 to January 2018. Not seasonally adjusted. Plastics products is number one with 14,400. Okay? Jobs added. Number two is breweries, wineries, and distilleries at 14.1K. In other words, American manufacturing is producing more plastic bottles to put more liquor in, because Donald Trump is president, and there's no way we're going to make it without getting really fucked up. So that's one idea. But then there's some real analysis. Americans are drinking less soft drinks and more beer, wine, and liquor. Okay. That's a really steep trend line since about 2010. Long about the Great Recession. But then he goes into craft brewing and craft distilling and craft winemaking. But then along comes this. All the new brewery jobs have been created at establishments of 499 employees or fewer, and almost all the new distillery jobs at establishments of 99 employees or fewer. And he cites a piece by Ryan Avent, writing about craft distilleries and craft other stuff. And cites his colleague Noah Smith, wondering if craft brewing might be a model for how to lift more Americans into the middle class. And it's not, you know, everybody needs to be making beer. Although for a long time, you know, when I was a younger man, I thought, you know, I'm going to give up all this and I'm going to go and I'm going to be a brewer and just worry about different, you know, strains of hops and 2-row versus 4-row versus 6-row barley and stuff. But it turns out people are finding meaning in this. Because, and this is one that'll drive the goddamn Republicans crazy. In an age of growing industry consolidation and concentration, well, it turns out that beer and liquor are some of the most heavily regulated industries in America,
with structural separation of distribution, retail, and production at the state level. Because of that, they are also some of the most open and competitive industries. So in other words, you can't sort of Walmartize the process where you've got it from cradle to grave, because that's the model. You've got to control every aspect of the process in order to be successful. For instance, Delta with the thing in Georgia, Steve. Well, Delta went into the fuel business, buying their own fuel, and that's why that tax credit mattered. Well, this model says that that's the wrong way to go. That in fact, and I'm just reading from this because it's easier to do that than to explain. I hope I'm not boring.
No, not at all.
Is this craft everything boom making us richer or poorer? Well, the answer to that is that the more artisanal a product becomes, the less actual worker productivity, as it's defined, there is. And with that in mind, he writes, all this reminds me of a famous manufacturing productivity study published by McKinsey and Company in 1993. The firm compared value added per hour worked. Boy, that value added thing, that's another hand grenade for working people with the pin out. The firm compared value added per hour worked in various industries in Germany, Japan, and the U.S. And it found that U.S. manufacturing workers were much more productive overall. They were working harder for less money than their counterparts in either Germany or Japan, which were hotbeds of manufacturing at the time, and still largely are. Now, that's not to say that German and Japanese workers weren't also very productive, but here's the thing. They studied brewing. And in an article reported way back in the New York Times, brewers in Germany, for example, are far less productive than Japanese or American beer makers. But the reason is hardly that the Germans lack the technology. Oh, damn it, they invented it. The more efficient American and Japanese brewers use machinery that's imported from Germany. And this guy writes, also, the Germans made better beer. They surely could have made it more efficiently, but custom law and one presumes customer demand for a more artisanal product kept them from doing so. So were German brewers less productive, or was McKinsey's productivity measure too narrow? And the same goes for the current Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers. The agency adjusts its price and productivity measures for a number of different products for changes in quality, but doesn't try to do so for beer, wines, and spirits. So the fact that consumers have more and better drink choices now than they did a decade ago doesn't show up in the productivity statistics. And neither do the psychic rewards earned by people like the former lawyer and biotech scientist whose Washington distillery features prominently in the article by Mr. Avent. And so, consequently, maybe a workplace where you're not one of 10 million employees, but one of 498, maybe that feels a little bit more like a community. Maybe that feels a little more like you're having an impact on something that's actually tangible and quantifiable and qualifiable, and where people look down, hey, There's Bill. He's got a look at that. He's building himself a new house. Gosh, Bill and Sally sure do have a lovely little family there. And, you know, they both work at the brewery. And this isn't necessarily a pay on to beer, but a pay on to the fact that because there are regulations and because of the way that those particular industries wind up being structured, they flourish. Now, you get rid of those regulations and watch all that go away. And watch the Harvard more bigger assholes. You know, we got to get rid of these little bastards. You know why? They're making the rest of us look bad. They actually enjoy their miserable little prolish lives. God damn it, this is intolerable.
Yeah, that's, you know, you have a great point there, Bob. I mean, you know, it sort of harkens back to a more of a mercantile type of a system, you know, when, you know, there was maybe not quite as, there wasn't as great as inequality as there is now in today's economy. And I think that actually allowed the middle class to flourish. I know that during the Renaissance, for example, it allowed the Italian middle class to expand greatly. And gave rise to a lot of the, Enlightenment ideas. And then going back to the idea of, you know, regulations are not job killing, they're actually job creating. I think the more regulations we have, you know, the more there is for people to, you know, the more jobs there are for people to make sure that, you know, those regulations are being followed.
Right, like, and you know, a safety regulation that keeps Uncle Fred from falling into the vat at the brewery.
Yeah.
So that he has to bravely fight off 15 people who jump in to save his life. You know, W.C. Fields told that story, and he said, "Ah, death, where is thy sting? Ah, grave, where is thy victory? Drowned in a vat of beer." those are actually good things. And they're things that community forms around. And as I read that whole article, and again, it's over at Bloomberg, and it's under the, it's in the opinion section, and it's filed under jobs. As I read that, there's certainly nothing economic about the horn, but compare what we have here. We happy few. St. Crispin's Day. Consider what we have here versus some lying bag of pus like Limbaugh, who talks to a million people a day. You know, one of the biggest treats I get here is getting to interact with the people who listen to the program. Getting to really interact, whether it's on Friday on the front porch and we get, or whether it's new callers, old callers. These feel like relationships. And I hope others feel the same way toward me.
Even the psychotic ones like mine?
I don't know that it would be the same if we had a listenership of a million.
You're absolutely right, Bob. I mean, I certainly feel that way about other folks here in the community, and, you know, just with our conversations we have, and, you know, when stuff happens to somebody in the community, I mean, there really is a outpouring of support for each other, you know, both in good and bad times, you know?
Yeah, for instance, I just got a note from Kitty in Boston. Kitty said, "I just got back from 3 wonderful days in Montreal celebrating my 56th birthday, but I have a few bucks left over to kick in tonight. I subscribe via PayPal, but not to worry. I'll keep on subscribing no matter what. Have a great weekend, everybody." Signed, Kitty from Boston. Thank you, Kitty. I've heard Montreal bagels are second only to New York bagels. I'm curious about that.
Hey, speaking of Montreal.
And thanks to Libby as well. Between Libby and Kitty, we are now down to only $105 to go with only 12 minutes left in the program.
Awesome. Speaking of Montreal, Bob, I was going to say that I have a chance to see, you remember Gino Vannelli? He had some hit songs in the 70s.
I just want to stop.
Yeah.
Wasn't that one of them? Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't he have the long Kenny G hair and all of that stuff?
Yeah. Not so much anymore, but he's going to be playing in Beverly Hills on the 24th. So what I think I'll do is rather than buy the tickets online and pay like, you know, a surcharge of like $20 per ticket, which is like half of the ticket price, you know, essentially, I'm just going to show up, you know, and get tickets the day of the show, you know?
Yeah, you might save a couple of bucks.
Yeah.
By the way, here, this is a really good observation coming from Scott and Punky too. See, I had a feeling that article about the breweries would sort of tickle some, that it would ferment. Yes, it would ferment in people's
brains. There's method to your madness.
Yeah. Even when I don't know what it is.
Do I get a cowbell for that one, Bob?
Ab, you damn. Yeah, man. Absolutely. I'm just giving them away like they're free tonight. no, I'm not, actually. The subject line, Craft Businesses Products, Scott and Punky, and you know, Scott's an old radio hand. Back to iHeartRadio for a moment, Scott says, given what we know about craft businesses and products, I think it could be accurately said that iHeart and Clear Channel before that had much to do with killing off broadcast radio in this country, which, curiously, that also happened along about the time that, you know, radio was largely deregulated. Think about it. With mass consolidation and programming centralization, regional and local creation and influence, flavor, if you will, was done away with in radio. What once was live and local became homogenized and voice-tracked into a state of utter blandness. We've seen overall radio listenership diminish in the past 10 years with the under 35 demo tuning out in massive numbers. And that's absolutely true. Once again, that's a case, if you can imagine it, and maybe that's what we're talking about here with the horn, or what we're talking about with little local radio stations, craft broadcasting, artisanal broadcasting, people who actually live in a community talking about a community and the things going on in the community and serving the community. iHeartRadio never served a single community. I mean, you could listen to iHeart from Pittsburgh or iHeart from Washington, D.C., and depending on the format you chose, they were playing the same goddamn music.
Yeah, what they ended up serving, Bob, was the huge debt that they incurred when they did a leverage buyout in 2008 of all these, of the whole, business,
But then again, Bob, who's the youngest among us here?
That would be you.
I'm 47. Anybody younger than 47 here?
Well, John is when he comes in, and I think Jeremy is in Vermont, and we got a couple of other.
We need some young blood around.
Brother Deacon Ace is younger. No, it's not. This is not the old Codger Radio Hour by any stretch of the imagination.
Herb Jepko and the Nightcaps.
Seems like
Scott will get that
here,
one.
But yeah.
But when you've got somebody who's, there really is, and I've talked about this before, that there's value in having local media outlets who are doing something besides servicing debt, like Rick says. And of course, yeah, once again, Bain did to iHeartRadio what they do to everybody else. They sucked all the value out of it and then sent them off to bankruptcy court. But, with local radio, you've got the opportunity, maybe somebody, recording technology has become extremely accessible now so that people can record music in all kinds of different places and things can go back. You could actually go back to the days of having local hits that went national, which is how rock and roll got largely started. And then it, of course, mushroomed completely out of control.
Sure. Sure.
And just to, just to add one more element to that, you get people who actually learn broadcasting and learn to love broadcasting. I mean, take for instance, just because I hate his goddamn guts, that little right-wing turd, Mark Levin. That guy has no more business behind a microphone than I do behind the stick of the space shuttle.
Voice is like nails on a chalkboard.
And it affords an opportunity for a community to bond and to gel. I mean, for all the hokey goofiness of say WKRP in Cincinnati, let's see. Well, congratulations on that proud pig, Les. It's the silver sow, Johnny. Right, you are, Les. He was proud of that silver sow, and he was proud of that copper cob. And they got together there at their, there's still a West Virginia Broadcasters Association and Alabama Broadcasters Association. Mm-hmm. But they're not doing half of what used to be done. And once again, it's a function of deregulation and centralization. For all of these assholes who say, these right-wing assholes who say, I believe in the free market. Well, they don't very much because they don't want anybody in the free market except whoever can corner all the business. You know what I mean? Oh, and thank you, Haley. Thank you a ton for jumping in there. We have just gone down under the three-digit mark. We are down to only $85 to go to finish the program and 6 minutes to get there. So that is great help indeed, Haley. But that turned into an interesting topic for consideration. I bet I'll hear from folks over the weekend about that.
Sure. Couldn't you say the same thing about the movie industry? Just about anybody with a camera and a drone can make a quality movie now.
Well, that goes back to that awful Blair Witch Project movie that was, shot on camcorders?
You don't have to go buy a $1 million crane to get an aerial shot now. A drone will get you one. You know, there's so many ways to get you there now.
And some of that is absolutely true. But
think of all the drones you could have bought from Toys R Us at bargain prices right now this week. Oh my goodness!
I see what you did there.
There are tons of drones going off at just real cheap prices at the Toys R Us right now.
I ain't driving 30 miles to that joint. Clearance sale. It's sad, though. End of an era.
It's an hour and a half to the nearest one where I live at.
I went to one about 50 miles west of here, and it's like they even had a set-up display in front that, you know, displayed all of their business items that were for sale. You could actually buy their safe. You know, it's like, oh, jeepers. You know, but that's what it is.
I haven't set foot in a toy department in 50 years.
Well, neither have I.
Well, that's because you killed your inner child, Sparky.
No, all my nieces and nephew grew up pretty quick, too.
Well,
and you graduated up into bigger, heavier, and far more dangerous toys as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, I never had any kids, never wanted any. My sister ruined me with her kids.
Oh, yeah, the big Toys R Us drone sale, they're flying out of the store.
It's the destruction of the environment that ruined my desire for kids. You saw that chart that I posted up about the Arctic ice volume now? There's less Arctic in the ice right now than there typically is in July. Oh, good God! There's less ice in the Arctic right now in places where the sun hasn't even risen than there is normally in July.
Yeah, but I wasn't thinking about that 40 years ago. I was thinking about starting a career.
Well, think about what that lack of refrigeration is going to do to our agricultural system when it goes away in the next year or two. I hope you enjoyed eating because it ain't going to be in style for very much longer.
Well, everything's still going good here.
Well,
this cold weather has the almond growers all freaked out.
Oh, I'll bet. Well, I mean, you want to talk about sad? It was a week ago. Well, it was last Sunday night. I came back from.
Miss it. Oh, shoot. I'm still watching the Jackrabbit Swimming game on the computer. They're down by 3 with 22 seconds left. They're still alive.
I came back. I came back from dropping Agnes off, which made me sad in the first place. But it was a warm Sunday evening. And as I drove up the mountains, or drove up the mountain, I had my window down. And I heard the joyful sound of the peepers, the first peepers of spring. Little teeny tiny frogs that make a great big noise. And they're a joyful sound this time of year. And I thought, oh, they're back. Well, I'm so happy. And the next morning there was a foot of snow on the ground. And I thought, oh, I hope you little bastards got into hiding because... You know, there they are. They're just sitting out on the tree going, want to get laid, want to get laid, want to get laid. Or else they're, got laid, getting laid, getting laid, got laid, got laid. Yeah. And, I hope that freak fucking foot deep snow didn't wipe them out. Talk, I mean, almond growers can freak out about cold temperatures in their blossoms, but you know, I don't have any money in it. But I was about halfway freaked out the next day about the little peepers, because they, along with the red buds, are the ones that, you know, they let you know that spring's actually here. At least
I had a one single quail come screaming through my yard the other day. Me and Grady traced him up into the redwood tree. But he ran a long ways. And those little suckers can move if you've never followed a quail.
Oh, and by the way, one last thing before we get out the door. It turns out, according to the Daily Beast, that Rexxon Tillerson got Elvis'd. He literally found out he was no longer Secretary of State while he was sitting on the toilet.
In the plane?
What I've got here was, you know, John Kelly, Rex Tillerson was on the toilet when I told him he'd be getting fired.
Well, I thought he was on the plane after he left the Canary Islands.
No, but no, Kelly had told him on Friday.
Oh. When he was in Africa, right?
Right.
Yep.
Tillerson, Kelly told the room, was suffering from a stomach bug during a diplomatic swing through Africa and was using a toilet when Kelly broke the news to him. Is there any end to yes. just how you know?
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's like, I mean, hey, John, that's great, man, but I don't have much more to. I mean, one more of these, and my brains are going out my butt. Can we talk again? And can you just give me 15 minutes here? I mean, come on, John, we're buddies, right? Rexy's gonna fire you. Well, shit.
Literally.
So
you haven't lived until you've been canned on the toilet.
Yeah, last words of Elvis Presley. I'm gonna go to the bathroom and read for a little bit. Mm-hmm. So that's it for the program. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Sparky, for your stellar moderating job and your moderating job here on the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Thanks, Haley, for joining in. Thank you, Billable Rick. Thanks, Laurel. Thanks, as always, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks to each and every one of you who support the program and help us keep it on the air. We got $85 to go to finish the week. Just $85. And thanks, of course, to everybody, all of you who share your precious finite time engaged in this little conversation. Thank you so much. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. We'd be in a mess right now without you. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.